Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Sure, we might as well ask Eamon Shanahan while he's there. Eamon, your favourite car ever? You must have had a few over the years.
Well, actually, funny enough, not that many, because I tended to keep my cars for about 10 years at a time. My dad would have had a number of cars. I remember people of a certain vintage will remember the Renault 16 as being an extremely comfortable car.
Yeah.
It had seats that were like armchairs inside. And now the suspension was a bit wallowy, and on the bog roads, it wasn't great. You'd see yourself hopping off the roads, but it was a comfortable thing to drive in.
Ah, back in the day. There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
and
listen.
Interestingly, throw this in as well too. The mechanics loved the simplicity, and the London Routemaster bus, that's the one with the where you jump in at the back, they loved it for exactly the same reason. Easy to service.
Oh, very good. And that's a very important thing as well to have in a car. Eamon, well, listen, we've decided, not surprisingly, to talk a little bit about the heat and the temperatures. And I mean, in one sense, we're all delighted that it's going to be warmer. Lots of us are. But temperatures of up to 29 and 30 at the weekend can cause their own problems for older people in particular.
And older and younger. I think it's no harm just to start off, just to kick off with, if you like, a slightly positive note, in the sense that you have said it already. People are looking forward to having the nice bit of sunshine, and it's worthwhile, bearing in mind it's the old cliche, all things in moderation, but there are benefits to sunshine. People will feel better. There is no doubt that people who have a moderate exposure to sunlight will generate more of the so-called happy hormone called serotonin. So there's a reason that people feel happier when things are nice and warm. And equally, exposure to sunlight is the best way we can generate vitamin D from a bone protection point of view, and getting appropriate exposure to sunlight. But you're looking at 20 to 30 minutes two or three times a week, and not during the heat of the day. So that then brings us on to, it's all things in moderation. So what do we do to try to protect ourselves from the excesses of sunshine and the excesses of heat?
Exactly. And will we start with the babies, so, and the very small kids? Is there anything extra needs to be done for them in the heat?
Okay, the main thing really is just watching out for heat exhaustion. You see, all right, God only knows where the thermometer is going to finally rest. And it's looking like, I think it's next Monday is the one where they're looking at peak temperatures. And again, to be fair, our proximity to the North Atlantic does moderate our temperatures to a degree. We're not going to see the kind of absolutely murderous temperatures they're going to experience in the UK and across the continent. But heat exhaustion is a situation where the person can no longer shed heat. So the problem there is that we need to be able to perspire, and as the perspiration evaporates, it drops our core temperature and keeps our core temperature pretty constant around 37 centigrade. The difficulty is that babies, because of the way their bodies are put together, and then older people, because their whole metabolism would be slowed up, have greater difficulty shedding the excess heat. And so it's probable then to drive up the core temperature. And if the core temperature goes up well beyond 40 centigrade, then there are problems there, because the person can become quite unwell in themselves. So it's really, what do we do to try and help protect babies from the excessive heat, and indeed the elderly as well? And again, there are lots of practical measures you can do to do that.
What about bringing babies to the beach? Is that a bad idea if it's very hot?
Yeah, I think we need to name it and say yes. The general recommendations are that everybody, but children included, should not be, if it's excessively hot. Now, again, it's all things in moderation. You want us to use sense about this. What you want to do is you want to avoid being outside when the sun's rays are at their strongest. So that's between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. So again, say that 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Even in the middle afternoon, so 4 or 5 o'clock, it can still be extremely warm. I think that now there'll be parents who'll be structuring their holidays and their breaks around being able to get to the beach. I think the thing is that it's harder to maintain a reasonable temperature for a child when you're out on the beach. You can't get into the car because it's like a furnace. You see, one of the main ways of keeping away from heat exhaustion is literally staying indoors with doors and windows closed and taking loads of fluids. And that's probably the best way. And in fact, I did read somewhere recently where simple measures like keeping the curtains drawn or the blinds down and doors closed and windows open will keep the indoor temperature apparently something like anything up to 10 degrees cooler than the outside temperature. But that's not possible if you're down on the beach. That's the problem. So it's go in the morning or go in later in the afternoon, but try to avoid the hottest part of the middle of the day.
And what about older people who can get kind of weak in the sun? Obviously, I suppose a lot of them would be staying out of it anyway. But is there anything extra they can do in terms of should they be drinking more water or what?
Well, indeed, it's important that people would take an adequate amount of fluids. Now, one of the things to bear in mind is that when you are perspiring, it's not just water you're losing, but it's salt you're losing as well. And where you lose a lot of salt because of excessive sweating, you can actually become quite weak as a result of that. There are a variety of There are rehydration drinks. I think that's probably the best way to describe them, that do have some degree of salt in them. Now, the problem is salt, and it's going to taste like seawater, but it's to replace that which you're losing. And one of the problems is it's not just the dehydration bit, but the lack of salt, and that can lead to the individuals feeling quite weak. Sodium is necessary for the proper functioning of the nervous system, but also of muscles throughout the body. And if we get very low on sodium, that can lead to the person being quite unwell, nausea, vomiting, confusion, fast, shallow breathing, and so on and so forth, and indeed loss of consciousness.
Yeah, so stay out of the sun and maybe increase your water intake, but not too much. Is there an argument for increasing your salt intake?
Yeah, there probably is in these times. I mean, we're forever saying to people don't take salt, but to be fair, in this kind of weather and where people are perspiring a lot, and that's the thing, it's if somebody's perspiring a lot, yes, do then take extra salt in your diet, because you're replacing that which you're losing, which is salt. It is literally sodium chloride is what you lose in salt. I mean, that's why sweat tastes salty, is because it has salt in it. So you need to replace the salt that you're missing, and that can help the person feel better. Again, there is a well-known brand of oral rehydration therapy. That's the generic name for it. It comes in sachets. You mix it up. It tastes like seawater. Stick it in the fridge, because if you keep it good and cold, it doesn't taste quite as foul. But that a glass of that can often be as effective as 4 or 5 or 6 glasses of ordinary water, because you're getting the combination of the water and the salt that you're losing.
Are you talking about dioralite or something like that?
I didn't use that word, but that's the case.
No, it's okay. I think it's justifiable.
Almost generic at this stage. Yeah.
It is, absolutely. Eamon, what exactly is heat stroke and sunstroke? Are they one and the same thing?
They are. Heat stroke and sunstroke are essentially, you're absolutely right. Essentially, it's when the core body temperature rises above 40 centigrade. The difficulty is that once you start going above that, particularly in the very frail, the very young, the very old, but indeed for many people in between those ages who have underlying health conditions, what happens is that normally our mechanisms try to protect us by increasing the sweating, and we feel unwell. The difficulty is for somebody who suffers from sunstroke, paradoxically, there's an inversion that happens. So we stop sweating. But at that stage, then the internal temperatures tends to race up to 45, 46. And at that stage, then you begin to get serious internal damage. Cells begin to die off throughout the body, including the brain, and that can be extremely serious. The important thing in those circumstances is to bring the person into a cool place, trying to get them rehydrated. If there's any doubts, unfortunately, the reality is if the person passes out, they need to be brought to casualty.
Now, we'll have to talk about sunburn, Eamon, because no matter how many warnings we put out, like, it's only a matter of time before we walk around the streets of Tralee, Killarney or wherever and you'll see people with red raw skin. There's no point really in putting out the warnings, don't get sunburned, because people will anyway. What should they do if they do get sunburned?
Okay, so there are a couple of things. The reality is it is a burn, that's it. It's painful, it's hot, it's red, it's where the skin has been burned, literally. A cool shower or a bath can often be helpful. Try to resist the temptation to burst blisters. People who badly burn will develop blisters. The difficulty is that the blister is the healthy skin that's been lifted off by fluid that's under it. If you burst the blister, you now leave the skin underneath exposed to the air, and that can get infected, and that can be very that can be good. There are a variety of so-called emollients out there that can help, plain emollients, and you ask your pharmacist for that. They're kind of like moisturizers. Talk to your chemist and there are plenty of emollients there that you can use. So any plain emollient can be used on unbroken skin to help with discomfort. If the skin has become broken, if it has become inflamed, then there is a specific antibiotic cream that can be used for burns, and your GP can prescribe that for you. So on the unbroken skin, you can use emollients or so cool shower, bath, then moisturize the skin using the emollients, and if the skin is broken or is infected, you will need an antibiotic cream, and your GP can prescribe that for you.
Is there anything you can take orally that will ease the pain of sunburn?
Mostly paracetamol or ibuprofen, the usual things, the over-the-counter preparations, that's about the size of it. If the burns are very bad, if the person has a lot of pain, you may need to get something that would only be available on prescription, stronger painkillers.
Have you seen some pretty bad cases of sunburn over the years?
Oh yeah, unfortunately over the years. Now I was going to say, fortunately thus far this year I haven't seen anybody badly burned yet, and please God I don't either, but certainly I've seen people. I remember one unfortunate guard years and years ago, and I think unfortunately dear to he had it for belly bunion after he came off his shift. I think he fell asleep on the beach.
Need I say more? Oh dear God, it's happened to us all. I fell asleep in the beach myself the odd time and woke up scorched as well, so I shouldn't be sneering too much at people. Eamon, just one thing before we go to break that struck me, still on the subject of burns. You know the way you hear somebody got first degree burns or second degree burns, or how does that scale go?
The way it works is that, if you like, first degree, it's the most superficial tissue, that the area is reddened and it may or may not be blistered, but if it is, it's only at a very minimal degree. It's actually just the outermost layers of the skin are blistered. To put it bluntly, if somebody has a third degree burn, it's essentially exactly the same to cook a piece of meat. You're now actually cooking the meat, the flesh, the muscle under the tissue. That's the difference between a first and a third degree burn.
And then a second degree, or is there such a thing?
It's in between. Yeah.
So I suppose third degree burns are what you'd be talking about if you were in a fire.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. But you can get third degree burns from sunburn also. That's the problem.
Oh dear.
I mean, if you get exposed to enough energy from any source, you will start cooking the flesh. The problem with that is that then, you see, first degree burn, it's relatively superficial and the skin will grow back in time. With a third degree burn, the difficulty is you've actually destroyed the tissue underneath the skin and it won't grow back, and you may end up having to have a graft.
Yeah. Oh dear God. Well, listen. Hopefully, we've frightened people enough as they head to the beach for the afternoon.
Don't be afraid. Just be careful.
Yeah, and lorry on that sunblock, and of course put the hats on as well, because
the heat
into the head is another important thing. Eamon, we're going to take a break at this point, but I just want to remind the listeners, if you have any questions that are heat related or sun related or skin cancer related, perhaps, do send those in to us and we will prioritise those particular questions, but we will also take other general queries too. And a quick reminder of how to get in contact. If you'd like to WhatsApp or text us, the number is the same for both. It's 083 300 3300. If you want to email us, we're on talkabout@radiokerry.ie. That's all lowercase. And Padraig is on the phones today on 0667123666.
Medical Matters on Talkabout, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
All right, Eamon, we're going to kick off our questions this week with one from a 21-year-old Killarney lady. She says, will you please ask Eamon, I have an itch on and off since May and it's driving me mad. I've tried all the creams and antihistamines. I've had bloods done to check if anything is wrong. I'm just waiting for the results. Is there anything that will help until my bloods are back? Now, she's just 21.
Critter. Yeah, I mean, where you've got sort of intractable itch like that, you would wonder whether or not there's some condition inside. I'm just being careful about the words I use. There are a number of conditions that can give intractable itch, conditions to do with the liver, the kidneys, the gastrointestinal tract. And the difficulty with these things is that until you actually treat the underlying cause of the problem, it's actually very troublesome. What tends to happen is that what the dermatologists do often is that they'll double up in terms of the antihistamines, using two different kinds of antihistamines in large doses to try to control the symptoms. The big problem here is that until you know what the underlying cause of it, you can't apply the specific treatment, and that's, I presume, where our unfortunate listener is at in terms of this process. Go back to what I was saying before. It's going to be a question of, unfortunately, waiting on for the results. Using large doses of antihistamines and combinations to try to control the symptoms until you get your results, which hopefully will come through shortly.
North Kerry lady is 74 and has a kidney infection. She's passing a lot of water and says, what should she take? Now, by that, I mean, I presume she's wondering in terms of medication.
Okay, so urinary tract infections are very common. And again, interestingly, this time of the year, we're seeing a lot more of them. And the reason simply there is because people are getting dehydrated and they're not able to get enough fluids. And when they're not, don't take enough fluids, the urine gets concentrated and then bacteria started growing it, and then you've got your urinary tract infection. Again, it's just a question of phraseology. People talk about urinary tract infections. Strictly speaking, we're probably talking about cystitis and inflammation of the bladder. So the classic symptoms of cystitis are going to the toilet often, burning, passing urine, sometimes issues with incontinence and urgency. In other words, when you want to go, you got to go now. You can't be waiting. For people who have those kind of symptoms, two things. Home remedies you can use straight away is increase your fluid intake again, flush things out. Cranberry juice can be useful at relieving the symptoms. Old fashioned pearl barley water can be very useful as well. What's pearl barley water? What's it? A half a cup of pearl barley put into a saucepan with enough water to cover it, leave it simmer for about 20 minutes, strain it off. Let it cool down and then drink that. It's an alkali drink. The problem with urinary tract infections with cystitis is that the bacteria tend to make the urine very acid, which literally burns. And the thing is, the alkali in the pearl barley counters that. So it's just a home remedy. There are things you can get from the chemist as well too, over the counter, that help counter the symptoms. If you are toxic, if you're feeling unwell yourself, you may require an antibiotic, and for that you need to give a GP a ring.
Now, I notice we're seeing a return of COVID questions, Eamon, quite a few of them this week. Listener says, how soon after being in close contact with somebody with COVID should she expect to show symptoms?
So that's the problem, you don't know. And I'm not trying to be smart about that one. The point is that it's, again, it's a seed and soil kind of situation. You've got people who have clearly been exposed to COVID and don't develop any symptoms whatsoever, and then vice versa, people who have COVID and they don't know where the heck they got the damn thing from. It's not a given. Even if you have exposure to COVID, you may or may not develop COVID yourself. And why does that happen? It's just different people react in different ways to the virus. Now, I think one of the issues, one of the problems we have is that there are, and I mean, I've certainly been seeing this, people who've had the symptoms, they've had the runny nose, the sore throat, bits of cough and so on and so forth, to a varying degree, well or unwell, and they've been testing. And as I've been saying from the start of COVID, the result that's coming back is that the virus is not detected. It's not a negative test. And the difficulty is that 4 and 5 days into this episode, that's when the test turns positive, at the point in time when there is sufficient virus around for the test to turn positive. Prior to that, the person is shedding the virus. So the difficulty is that where we're at the moment, where I'm at the moment, unless proven to the contrary, if somebody has symptoms of runny nose, sore throat, cough, whatever, they have COVID right now until proven to the contrary, because that's how common it is. That's how much of it we're seeing.
Moving on from that one, a listener said, I had a blood test done and I was told to ring up for the results in 2 to 3 weeks. I have tried several times but can't get through to the doctor on my phone. Yeah. Do I take it that if there was a problem with my bloods, my doctor would have been in touch with me by now?
No, unfortunately not. Part of the reason why you can't get through is because of everything that's going on. You see, I suppose the thing is, Deirdre, and you're saying this in the hospital as well, we're seeing levels of illness in the community similar to what we were seeing at the end of December or the beginning of January. So most of the practices are pretty flat to the mat. All I can say to you is keep contacting the practice. One of the things you could do if all else fails is call to the practice and just leave the message with the secretaries and somebody will ring you back.
Sheila's in Cremant. She says, can a pain in your back come back a couple of years after pulling something in it? So obviously Sheila did something to her back a few years ago, but now her lower back is sore when she's bending down and getting up.
The answer is yes, but it could equally be that it's just something new altogether. I mean, if she's got ongoing symptoms and if the simple remedies, I'm talking about the paracetamols and the ibuprofens, are not doing the job when she can make an appointment to get her doctor to see her about it, the answer is yes, the problem could come back, but it could just equally be something new altogether.
Okay. Now, this one is a little bit long, Eamon, but I think it's worth reading it out. It's just a question, really, about the sequence in which people are seen in the health system at the moment. So bear with me. It's a mother. Yeah. She took her child to South Dock recently. Triage was done, a triage inspection. The doctor at South Dock recommended an X-ray to check for a broken bone. They gave her a letter for the A&E, so that said the child needed an X-ray. Mother took the child to the A&E of UHK. She had to wait for 3 hours and then they did a further triage consultancy. Her point is there was no need for this delay because South Dock had already done the exam. She then had to wait a further 2.5 hours for the X-ray. She says it's no wonder there's so much COVID everywhere. Surely she shouldn't have had to wait for 3 hours in a busy waiting room full of people.
Okay, we can make recommendations, but the hospital will always do their own assessment. And again, the reason they do their own assessment is because their indemnifiers will not allow them to do anything else. Time was when we would have done letters for the hospital to say, look, we think this person needs an X-ray for X, Y, or Z, in the sense of somebody going in with an obvious injury. The reality is that the hospital don't have any choice on this. Their indemnifiers make them reassess the person all over again. Basically, they don't trust the assessment we do. They have to be seen, they have to be examined, and unfortunately that adds to the delay.
That's a shame, isn't it? Because it would all move so much quicker if
again, this, okay, this subject we could spend days talking about, but the reality is that pretty well every public hospital in the country are obliged by their indemnifiers, by their insurers, that everybody coming in has to be seen and assessed at the front door and that typically isn't casualty. St. Luke's in Kilkenny is probably the only one where they have a different system in the sense that they have multiple forms of assessment. They have medical, surgical, obstetric, paediatric assessment. So they have a lot more staff at the front door. So people aren't all going through the one front door, if you know what I mean. But every single public hospital in the country, it's not just Tralee, Cork, Limerick, everywhere, everybody has to go through the front door and everybody has to be assessed at the front door by somebody before they can go any further.
Mary in Tarbert says, are electrolyte drinks good in hot weather and are they suitable for older people?
Absolutely and absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I mean, the only disadvantage of the electrolyte drinks is that they're salty. That's it. That's just the taste of them. But other than that, yes, absolutely. I fully agree. That was the thing I was trying to think of a minute ago. It's yes, electrolyte drinks are the right way to go.
Okay. Texter says, my daughter gets a rash on her arms and legs when she goes out in the sun. I put on sun cream, but that doesn't help. What should I use to prevent this from happening? Gets very sore and itchy.
Yeah, it's a heat rash. It's literally a heat rash. The problem is unfortunately, there are some people who are very sensitive to not the sunlight, but the heat. And when they warm up, their skin gets itchy. It may be worthwhile preloading, as long as she's over 2 years of age, getting her fixed up for an antihistamine before she goes out to try and counter the problem. The problem is when the skin gets hot, it releases histamine, which makes the skin itchy. The suntan lotion is still important, but it doesn't stop the skin from heating, which is the cause of the problem.
One final one, and a rather unusual one, Eamon. A male caller from Tralee says he eats a lot of chocolate and lately he notices that he gets shivers and shakes after eating it. Should he give it up?
I love chocolate, but chocolate doesn't agree with me. The big problem is that, okay, interestingly, chocolate, depending on the kind of chocolate you're eating, probably not so much with the milk chocolate, but certainly with the ones that have the higher percentage of chocolate in them, chocolate itself is a stimulant. That's the reason why people take it. And I suppose if you're eating enough chocolate, it could be the case that you are overstimulating yourself. The other possibility, though, that would be slightly more concerning, is that if you're taking a lot of chocolate, you're going to be taking a lot of sugar as well. And I actually wonder at this stage whether or not our listener is beginning to run into a problem with diabetes.
Yeah, they might want to get that tested out. Just
absolutely.
Briefly, this has just come in. We were talking about electrolytes. Is it okay to give an 8-year-old electrolytes?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
How I mean, frequently?
Again, it's probably... realistically, you're probably talking about every hour or two. I mean, it's within reason. Again, use your own common sense about this thing. The reality is that it's again what I said at the beginning, dear, to all things in moderation. People just have to be sensible. You can't prescribe the amount of electrolyte drinks that people are to take. Clearly, if you're taking a half a cup, it's not enough. If you're taking 6 litres, it's too much. Where do you strike the balance in between? People have to be sensible about this thing themselves.
They do, absolutely. Eamon, we let you go. Thank you for that very huge amount of questions there, and
mind yourselves out there, but enjoy the weather while it
enjoy
lasts.
Enjoy the weather. And remember that mostly it's a good thing.
It's mostly a good thing. That's
thanks,
it.
Eamon.
All right.